We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Hello. Hi. Is this thing on? It's podcast 370. Hopefully you're hearing it. And I say that because behind the scenes, things are changing. RSS feeds are swapping over.
That's right.
Your phone may blow up with a lot of new episodes. I'm just hoping that Friday morning you hear this when it's intended to come out.
Agreed.
It comes out essentially 1st of February. I'm hoping you're hearing it 1st of February if you're a person that listens to the podcast right away on a Friday.
Right.
Happy Friday. Hopefully you're hearing it properly. And in the next week or so, you'll not even know a change happens. But if you're going, where the heck's the podcast? Then I'm sorry about the delay, and we're glad to have you now.
Sure, absolutely. Well, yeah, things are switching. We're thrilled to be headed in a new direction with the podcast, and things will continue to proliferate, I'll say, with live debates and more guests and all that kind of stuff. I had a lovely afternoon, by the way, before we dive into a cool podcast.
You haven't actually told me about this yet, other than to tell me you were going to do it. I was busy editing. Oh, by the way, season four. The new stuff starts tomorrow.
First. Thank you. Yes.
This is what I was doing today. The new stuff starts tomorrow. I'm working on episode 5, but episode 1 premieres. This is the 06 comparison. Look, if you've seen our Corvette film, this is actually not a full retread. It's not. There's obviously some shots that are used the same and some sections that are the same, but it's probably 50% new. Even if you've seen the Corvette film and have memorized it.
Well, it's new commentary. New.
Absolutely. Yes.
Because we looked at these Z06s as these compared to each other, not in the larger context.
Totally.
Of Corvettes in history.
Totally. And we talked about the fact that you can, if you would like a Z06 Corvette, you could actually afford one between generation 5, 6, and 7.
Astounding.
So that piece is premiering on Motor Trend tomorrow, Saturday.
Yeah.
Very cool. So if you're one of the people that watches it on cable or other places, it's on PlayStation View, it's on Hulu, it's on other places, you can get it digitally.
Yeah,
pretty
cool.
We would love for you to watch it over the next week or so because this starts 7 new weeks of brand new TV episodes, and those will start populating to Amazon by about a month from now, by the beginning of March.
Pretty awesome.
It's all coming.
Yeah, we're thrilled to share all this content with you. Caymans is next week, but we got to get through Z06s first.
The Z06 piece is cool, and the Cayman piece is really cool. There's a lot of great stuff coming,
so
for
excited.
Sure.
All right, so I had a lovely afternoon thinking that this is work. I'm actually doing work. Mm-hmm. So what happened was a friend of the show, actually he went with us on the 2016 pilgrimage trip. He's local in town here, and he let me know that he just acquired a brand new Porsche GT3 Touring.
Ugh.
And he came by the house and picked me up, and we went for a drive this afternoon.
It's just warm and melted enough that you could actually get that car, because doesn't it have the Cup 2s on it?
Yes, it has Pilot Sport Cup 2s.
The opposite of winter tires.
Yeah, he said he gets a little squirrely even in 37 degrees, and the roads are clear and dry
here. Of course he does.
He gets a little squirrely on power coming out of a corner.
I'm not surprised at all.
And so we were ginger, but I still got my daily triple, which was...
well done.
Lovely.
Well done. Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to drive this GT3 Touring. It was pretty awesome. I'm
sure.
We're going to get to doing a fast blast of this car, but we're not quite at spring and summertime yet. And I figured the car only has 150 miles on it right now.
Wow.
This is a 6-speed as well, 500 horsepower. 9,000 RPM redline. He took it to 8, and I didn't get anywhere near that.
Wait, is it a manual?
It's a manual.
Really?
The Touring is manual.
Oh, that's even better.
6-speed.
That's even better.
It's just right.
How is that gearbox? Is it good?
It's brilliant.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear that.
You really... Well, I got to save all my commentary for the review when we get to it.
It's good.
Welcome to Porsche's world is what it says with each shift.
Well, but that's the 997 6-speed and the same generation Cayman was a fantastic 6-speed manual. So, I mean, if they can return to that feel, I love it. That's great.
You're reminded of, that's the ethos of Porsche, and this is why they pay so much attention. And honestly, this is why they charge you so much for this experience because, it's worth it. One cool thing I did come away with, though. Here's a cool tidbit for all you GT3 Touring owners.
Yeah, all 2 of you listening right now. Thank you. Yeah.
Not me. So this car has no lift upshift.
It is a feature.
Okay. Not only does sport mode activate the rev match downshift, but going from second to third, any gear at any speed, it gives you 2 seconds of time. So you don't have to move your accelerator foot. You don't have to move your right foot. You're almost floored. Your foot is planted. Push the clutch in, slot the new gear home, and it actually modulates the engine brakes for you. So other cars, it would hit the red line, it'd bounce off the...
The problem is you get into any other car after getting used to that, and you cannot drive it that way anymore, ever.
I said, once you get used to this, because every time I lift a little bit, and he's like, no, try it. And I had to train myself there for a little bit just to actually think, okay, don't lift when I upshift. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do, but then the car actually shifts almost as fast as PDK in a standard mode. Not in a sport setting, but in a standard mode.
Yeah, I'm with you. Wow.
It's
that is really cool.
Brilliant.
All right.
Upshift on a manual?
Yeah, okay, I hear your love. I am going to say I did actually bump into earlier today because we just randomly look around on the web. There is a GT2, mind you, RS. So the latest and greatest of the 991.
Yikes.
Currently for sale here in Salt Lake City for $450,000. And all I have to say is no.
House.
No.
Buy
no,
a house.
I just, there,
with that money.
No. I don't know what the MSRP is. It's not that, and no is the answer.
Wow. Yeah, no, there's no way. But yeah, I just had to share a little bit of Porsche love, and I will post those photos on Instagram probably on Monday. So
cool.
By the time, whenever you've heard this, go look for them on Instagram. I'll post some photos that I took because they are pretty awesome. Delightful.
You had
it doesn't
better...
have the houndstooth, but it has the sport textile and seats, and it had the carbon buckets and the carbon ceramics, and it's just...
Granted, you're also fish in a barrel when it comes to Porsche love, but
I am.
But you had a better drive day than I did. But I was watching our piece from Griot's, which is the situation where we had stuff stolen.
This is going to be special.
That was the difficult shoot where we had everything stolen, but we also got to drive the Eagle, not Eagle Speedster, but the E-Type Speedster, which is kind of like an Eagle, and the incredibly crazy fine-tuned 914 Porsche. That's going to be a really cool episode that is very different because it's you and I driving like collectible fine-tuned cars, which we haven't done before, and I'm excited about that piece as well. So I was editing that today and watching us drive those cars and kind of living vicariously through the footage, which is what I hope for all of you listening too. So there's a lot of cool stuff coming. We should do car debates.
We should have one
from Kirby writing to us in California. He's 17. We also have one from Scott writing to us as well. He's looking for a luxury car. And then guess what? I know you're not surprised. Wow, you've bombarded us with questions.
You guys are
awesome.
I love
it. There are some really, really good ones.
Yeah, you're totally awesome. All right, diving into the debate for Kirby. Thank you so much for writing. He is a 17-year-old high school senior living in Burlingame, California.
Yeah.
He said he started learning stick earlier this year on his older brother's tuned 86, which is
love
a great platform to learn on.
Yeah, for sure.
His brother's off at college, so he can't really use it. He doesn't have the ability to continue his learning of the stick. Mm-hmm. So he's thinking, all right, I need to get something for myself. And he's looking for a car in the 6,000 range, 6,000 and a half, maybe somewhere there.
Yeah, seven is the absolute, like, that's we're out at seven. Yeah,
which is fine. And you know, keeping our discussion about $5,000 cars has re-entered my mind, even though we're slightly above that.
Yeah,
but I found some surprising choices that I wouldn't hesitate to recommend to Kirby.
Agreed. Except Kirby, I do want to prepare you. The same thing we say about $5,000 cars applies here. And that
it does,
is,
yes,
whatever car you buy at this place probably needs something. You may get lucky.
Yeah,
you may get lucky. I understand that exists, and there I'm going to get letters about, I brought a $2,000 car and haven't done anything and put 100,000 miles on it. Great. I know there's exceptions. I know.
Well,
but
and
in
you've
general,
been the exception too with the Mini.
True. In general.
You've proved this.
The $5,000, the less than $10,000 car, let's put it that way, probably has enough mileage and enough life that's happened to it that it will need something. It doesn't mean it's going to be catastrophic. It doesn't mean to stay away. But just prepare yourself that if you buy this car for $5,000 to $7,000, you may turn around right away and get fill in the blank. Tires, transmission service. I don't know what that's going to be, but just keep that in mind. But we're still going to stay in your budget. I have some good ideas. Currently driving a Crown Vic. We're moving out of Crown Vic world where we're headed.
It reminds me of your Caprice, though.
Yes,
it actually reminds
for sure.
me of that sort of growing up
totally.
That you did with the Caprice in college.
Yes, absolutely.
It's kind of the same thing.
I briefly, if you've heard these origin stories on the podcast. If you haven't, go back to podcast number 52. That's a crazy one where we tell the whole story. But I had a 1982 four-cylinder Firebird with less than 90 horsepower for about 3 months and it started to just chew through alternators and belts. And I got really good at changing the belt on that, so I got rid of that car. And then I just inherited a line of Caprice Classics. So my dad bought the early 90s Caprice Classics, actually late 80s Caprice Classics, and just kept – everybody got a hand-me-down. My mom, me, my sister, we all got hand-me-down Caprice
was
Classics.
Was that the Dynoc with the wood trim?
No, we never had the wood trim one, thankfully. Okay. Okay. But it was the ones that were still boxy before they did the late mid-90s one that they also had an SS. That was after the Impala SS and the Caprice.
Yeah, right.
That was the later kind of rounded one. This is before that. The last of the boxy ones.
This was not that. Yeah. Think of the cool one. This was not that.
Well, but the last of the boxy ones. My dad, I think all told, I think he owned six before he got over Caprice Classics.
Unbelievable.
And so, yeah, I drove one of those for a long time. Moved to L.A. in that car.
That's right.
Drove it for a long time.
You had your rollerblades rattling around in that trunk.
I had
so
my
huge.
Entire life moved to Los Angeles in the back of that car. I still can't believe I did that. So I understand, Kirby, having the big body-on-frame, rear-wheel drive monster as your first car. Let's move on, shall we? Let's move on.
Exactly. Especially speaking of Crown Vicks, Kirby, and those of you who have worked for Ford and can verify this, I had a friend who was a supplier to Ford, and he said that they made so many Crown Vicks and Mercury Grand Marquis.
That body, essentially.
That body, that car, the stampings, they made so many of them that the new cars were actually had really terrible tolerances.
Oh.
Because the tooling was worn out and it was so beat down. They made so many and the tooling rounded off corners of, you know, steel tools and all this
stuff.
That
is funny.
So the tolerances, like doors were loose, and this was on new cars.
Sure.
Because the tooling was worn out. They made
so many
taxis and cop cars.
Yeah,
and
for sure. For sure. So that funny. Is funny. I love it.
So Kirby is looking for a car that he'll have until he leaves for college. Maybe he'll have a gap year in there. You know, maybe it's a short time he'll have it, but maybe if it turns out to be a good car, he might have it for a little bit longer.
But the pursuit here is first rear-wheel drive, manual, small sports car. He wants
really
that experience.
Is.
And it seems like not only does he want that experience because it's not the Crown Vic, which is true of a lot of things, but also because his brother has this 86 that's influenced him. So he's looked around in this world and he started with his personal love of the MR2. And he talked about both of the MR2s that happened. If you think about the little mid-engine Ferrari-looking MR2s came out in the 80s. There were the 80s and the one in the early 90s. Both
Super
of those,
cool.
Except that's been killed because there is a parental mandate in here that is must have good airbags. And those are too old to have good airbags. So both of those MR2s are out.
He's also been saying he's wanted a convertible in here. That's part
True.
Of his requirements,
True.
Even
yes.
though I don't know if we're going to get quite there, but maybe.
I think we're doing all right. He's talking about how he'd love to have the opportunity to have a small rear-wheel drive sports car to take on Pacific Coast Highway, which is not far from him. And I got to say, Kirby, honestly, I was more than twice your age first time I drove Pacific Coast Highway. So if you can do that as a high schooler, that's a good start to life, my friend. Let's
sure.
get you a convertible rear-wheel drive to enjoy that.
All right, so he's got the Crown Vic looking for the third MR2. So that is the Spider, known in the U.S. as the Spider. And that is the ZZW30 is really the engine code or the car code.
Sure, let's talk
for
codes. Why not? It's the Spider. It's that late 90s, early 2000s. Looks kind of like a more bug version of the first Boxster.
So built from 99 to 2007, at least that's when it was offered in the U.S. And he's really liking that. I actually agree with this car.
Agreed.
I think you can find them. I think they're going to be great. They're small, nimble, and I do think they meet the requirements for what you're looking for. So that's definitely consideration. I like where your headspace is at. Actually, your car ownership led me to a 300Z.
Oh, interesting.
Because I thought, well, T-tops, Targa.
Yeah.
Kind of convertible.
And the convertibles are even cheaper, but I would go T-tops. And you're
but
right. You
T-tops,
can get them all day long.
Now
airbags is the problem.
That is the problem because your car did not have that, and that was in
True.
1990.
Yes.
Airbags
were
in cars prior to that. They just weren't in your car.
You need to go, I think 91 or 92, they get them on the driver's side, and it's not till like 5 or 6 late in the run that they get them on the passenger side.
I mean, you could theoretically do the convertible of that car. It's a little bit bigger, but you find the right one. They're going to have high miles, though. Mm-hmm. Any of these are going to have high miles.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that MR2 Spider is going to have probably less, probably in the 70,000 to 90,000 range.
Well, it's significantly newer. It's a 10-year newer car than the Z car you're going to find. But here's the thing, though. If he buys one of those. I hadn't thought about this 3D DX. I like this actually quite a bit.
Honestly, it led me to
that's good.
It was like a progression of you. It was Caprices to 300ZX.
Kirby,
he's
let's
got
talk.
A Crown Vic, and it's like,
let's talk. That's funny. Well, it's very
why
funny.
Why not a 300Z?
I like it. Here's the thing, Kirby. If you don't get a turbo, which your parents are going to prefer you didn't have a turbo anyway, you don't get the turbo.
They'll be cheaper.
They're very cheap. You can get one for your budget. Maybe have money left over. Be careful of the fact that they are A, going to need something, and B, hard to work on. Ask me how I know. That was the most difficult alternator I've gotten to in the history of the world. That car almost just swore me off of being a wrench. It was just like,
you know what?
My hands are too big. This isn't happening. We're done. Anyway, I like that idea, though. That's cool.
Isn't that kind of interesting? Yeah. I just thought, all right, if we're going there, let's follow the progression.
Yeah, keep going. Okay.
Caprices to 300s.
Let's make Kirby as crazy as I am. I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry.
All right, so I've got a few choices here. I'm going to work up to them, and I started with some modern cars.
Okay.
2011 Honda CRZ EX manual in blue with 95,000 miles is $5,800.
Would run like crazy, would be more fun than you think, but isn't rear-wheel drive.
It's not rear-wheel drive.
Great
six-speed, not a convertible.
Though. Great six-speed.
It's got airbags. Mm-hmm. It's economic. It's got... you know, great rear space, rear hatch space. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to love about it and kind of an interesting choice. It's not a hot hatch by any stretch.
I see it, yeah.
But they're cheap and it'll run.
And all of the above, yes.
Because, Kirby, the thing in my mind is insurance, too. As we're going through all of these cars, you know, an insurer is going to see a 17-year-old driving a 300Z and go, ha, ha, ha. Sweet.
Except the car's going to be totaled out at $2,000, so they might be like, eh, whatever.
Well, true.
We'll see.
Still. All right. So I also shopped 2012 Hyundai Velosters, 98,000 miles.
Okay.
$6,500. You know they'd take six.
Yeah.
This was yellow. Actually looked pretty cool.
Okay.
2012, that's a modern car.
Sure it is. Yeah, for sure.
And it would meet all the requirements and I think would be pretty good on insurance. Pretty decent.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Yeah.
But then I thought, what about this Mini Cooper S convertible that I found? 2009.
Okay.
Cooper S convertible. Don't worry, it looks cool. It's silver with black stripes and a black top. Black wheels, too.
Right.
So it looks pretty boss.
Yeah, it looks
cool.
Yeah, I get
91,000 miles for $7,000.
And we know those cars can do twice that many miles.
Exactly.
Evan, actually, who won Spot the Mini.
Yes, hello, Evan.
Hi, Evan. Thank you, man. He wrote us back this past week and said that, I was curious, he wrote us back, gave us a Spot update. He said that Spot is doing fine, running around North Carolina and having a blast with it. It's become almost their go-to car because when they go into the city, they can park it anywhere. His wife has rediscovered fun driving and driving a manual. And Evan, who's every bit as big as you and I are, has discovered he can take the front wheel off his mountain bike and fit his mountain bike in the back.
Unreal.
Spot is getting used and is running like crazy. And Evan, I am thrilled again.
I'm so happy
that you won that car, that the raffle worked. Look, spoiler alert, no details at all. We are talking about what this year's raffle will be. We're talking about it.
Yeah.
There's lots of discussion. We still have to see, honestly, I hate to say it this way, we have to see the tax repercussions of how last year's
That's
actually
important.
Honestly. So once we get all our taxes done and we go, okay, all that worked, then we'll figure out this year's raffle. We're already talking about it because clearly Spot found a good home and we're thrilled.
This is more of a public service announcement than an actual option for you, Kirby.
Okay, what is it?
But I did find a 2002 Porsche Boxster in Arlington, Virginia with 104,000 miles for $6,900.
Wow.
And it has everything done to it. It's top shape.
Really?
It's not beat down. It's not, you know, dusty and covered with...
You can't see me, but I just sat up straighter in the podcast.
Yeah.
I just went, do I need a Boxster?
For 69, know they take 65, you might be able to get for 62.50.
We have it in our, we have a cheap sports cars episode coming up. That is episode 3 of this season.
Mm-hmm.
And that first gen Boxster is discussed in there. And now I am intrigued by the less than $7,000 Boxster.
Now,
Kirby's parents said no, they don't really want him to get a German car because they're worried about reliability and maintenance costs.
Exactly.
I do see that.
It's a used Porsche Boxster. It's also a Porsche. Mm-hmm. I don't care what model of Porsche it is. An insurance agent is going to see that and think, aha. A 17-year-old in a Porsche?
I don't think so. Let me double check what your rate's going to be. Hang on. I better talk to my supervisor.
Yeah. Just hold, please. I'm going to have a conversation. So that's why I say it's more of a PSA than anything, Kirby. But I just wanted you to know, you could genuinely get in a Boxster. Imagine yourself in a Boxster cruising up PCH.
Mm-hmm.
That could be cool.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't think that's the car you should get. I think you should consider any one of these other front-wheel drive Japanese cars that are going to run before you even think about a Porsche. You've got the rest of your life to think Porsche.
It's early for that. I agree with that.
It's rather early. I love the MR2. That is a good go-to choice here.
Totally.
But there's some other choices. That 300Z is kind of...
It's compelling. It's compelling. I think you'd enjoy that car quite a bit.
And high miles on the ones you can find. If you can find a good one, and you're willing to go 765, somewhere in there.
I see it. I like it. Kirby, I have three for you I want to talk about real quick. And you've brought up one of them. But here's the thing. I was reading your email, and you hadn't even gotten to MR2 Love yet. But I'm reading your email, and you're talking about the things you'd like. Convertible, less than $7,000, needs to be Japanese or American because your parents don't want you to have a European car.
Yeah.
It needs to have airbags. And I started thinking, wait a minute. Miata's obvious, but also wouldn't the MR2 Spider work? And then you brought it up, Kirby. So I think the MR2 Spider is a great one for you. Mm-hmm. You've asked, why doesn't this car sell better? I'll tell you the reasons. One, the Miata is better known.
I was going to say, we haven't said Miata up to this point.
Yes, and I'm going to get back to it. But the Miata is better known. I think that MR2 Spider, which I've always kind of liked, it is love it or hate it styling. Some people just flat out don't like it, okay?
This guy.
But I actually would own one. I would totally own
I know.
One, and you've never really liked it.
Yeah.
And I've driven it, thought it was really fun. Also, it makes a Miata, I know this sounds crazy, this makes a Miata look like a utility vehicle. There is borderline like two
small... I thought
small,
those K-cars, though.
Two small grocery bags, like little plastic grocery bags, and your storage is full, and it's all behind the seats.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no like normal trunk. There's none of that kind of stuff in the MR2 Spider, which makes it even less usable than a Miata, which is a shocking sentence. So this is the reason the Miata does better than
an
MR2.
Down.
But I like the MR2 for you quite a bit. You could get an NB that is a second generation Miata for sure. You said you're 5'8", so we're not having any of the weird Sasquatch issues I have in a Miata. You could get, and the NB is the one that fits me the least, but it would be great for you.
Yeah.
You might even find, maybe, because they've gone down, a Mazda Speed Miata, which is the turbo one, but you're not supposed to have a turbo. But you could definitely get an NB.
I just think about insurance ramifications for him.
Exactly. You might, and I think your parents are going to be like, no turbos.
Right.
You could also actually find yourself the first year NCs, third gen, are down in this area. They're getting there. I think it'd be
a fine.
But it's not like there's a lot of them, but I think you could find one. But NB, second gen for sure. But then I have one you didn't bring up that I thought, wait a minute. It's modern. It's got airbags. It's rear-wheel drive. It's convertible. He doesn't need utility.
Okay.
So problem solved there. It's in his budget. It's American.
Okay.
The Pontiac Solstice.
Oh, my gosh.
And honestly, you can get the base ones, which are about 180 horsepower. You can also find the GXPs, which are turbo at 250. You're not going to end up in the turbo. I know that situation.
Say, 250
but
horsepower.
I'm saying both of them are available for under $7,000. You have options.
Are they
here.
Really?
Now, the ones I was finding that are this low that are the turbos are also automatics. But you can find a manual for your budget of the Solstice. And the biggest problem I have with the Solstice for most people is the fact that there's the top closes in a weird way, even though it looks great.
It's
closes
fussy.
In a weird way.
Yeah.
And as a result, you have no storage. But you don't need storage. You're 17. And you've said right here you don't need any utility. You're driving a Crown Vic. American car, modern, airbags. You're not going to see a ton of them. They're out there.
This is actually interesting. I like this a lot.
I do too. So
this
these
is
are
actually
my
really
top three for you.
Really
second
intriguing.
Gen Miata, that MR2 Spider or Solstice. Take one of those. You don't need turbos. Take one of those down to PCH, drive it, love it, done.
I mean, Kirby, you realize the Solstice represented the new styling direction for Pontiac just before they killed the entire brand.
This is
it was this cool new, hey, no more plastic body cladding with the, you know, the huge three hot dog shaped bumps on the side, you know,
and the
raised
bubble,
portions.
The bubble interior buttons also gone. Yeah.
It's like, hey, we're going in a new direction. Kill the brand.
Yeah. The only thing I really don't like about the Solstice that I think has aged terribly is I think the interior is just a sea of plastic, and I don't love that.
It is.
But
that's
you know what?
Brought the price down,
but honestly, though, I think the interior of the Solstice is better than the interior of the MR2 Spider.
What if they brought the Solstice back as the name of the car under a different badge?
The Corvette Solstice and make it the 86 competitor.
Sure.
Yes. We have I'm going to beat this drum again. Corvette is a separate enthusiast brand. The current Corvette, the front engine right now, is called the Stingray. The one below it is called the Solstice. The new bin engine is called the Zora. There's your brand. You have an 86 Fighter, a standard above the Camaro front engine, big V8 Vette, and then you have the mid-engine R8 Fighter that is 150 to 200 grand called the Zora. I've just built a Corvette brand. Hi, GM. Hello. Is this thing on? Hi.
I'm actually really warming to that idea. I actually really like it.
Yeah.
And then, GM, you know what you could say is, we build sports cars. You could actually say those words again. Mm-hmm. And genuinely, you would. You've got the bones are there. Mm-hmm. Everything's right there. Huh. GM, we're giving you gold.
Yeah, we'll see.
What
we'll
on
see.
Earth?
Kirby, hopefully something there was helpful to you. Go buy a fun car. Let us know what it is. And totally. Go drive PCH. And next time we're in California, we'll come bug you. No, that exactly. actually won't happen. But maybe. Who knows? So let us know what you get. I hope that was helpful to you. We have a car debate for Scott coming up. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
Thanks to our television sponsors, both Griot's Garage and Covercraft have been incredibly generous to bring television once again to you guys, not only to the Motor Trend Network, but really it's helpful to go everywhere else. Mm-hmm. You can get our content for all those episodes. So
this is how the TV show gets produced, is those two sponsors. Candidly, that's exactly how it happens.
Huge thanks to these guys. They've been incredibly generous, and they're being generous to you guys too with a 10% discount across the board with the code EVERYDAY. So both companies use the code EVERYDAY, 10% off.
Yep. If you want to get anything, this is sunshades. This is the cool covers. I went on a rant last time about, you kind of looked at me like I was crazy about canine covers because I think it's awesome.
They are cool.
They are cool. You can get all this kind of stuff. You can get some WeatherTech mats. You can get all kinds of stuff through Covercraft. So EVERYDAY is the code there. Of course, Griot's, we love all of their car cleaning products. I don't use half of them right. Paul uses all of them correctly. And my car still looks halfway decent.
By the way, I just read on their Instagram,
yes,
if your car care products freeze, that's okay. And this has actually happened to me. Because of all of you listening that are in the Midwest and in the deep freeze right now, we are sorry. Yeah. That's really crazy going on. But they actually do their test and thaw, their freeze and thaw testing periods.
Good.
And so they just say, give it a quick shake, you know, make sure it's mixed thoroughly and you should be good to go. And I can verify that because I actually left Speedshine out in my garage last winter and it was a brick.
Well,
and then I shook it up in the springtime and it was fine.
I left Speedshine and all my other products in my garage and left my door open one night and came out and went, uh-oh, in the morning. So yeah, I've done the exact same thing. So that did work. So those both happened. Thank you guys as our sponsors, both Griot's and Covercraft for your support. Also, while we're talking Covercraft real quick, have you seen American Original, our Corvette film? Covercraft was the presenting sponsor of that as well, which is fantastic. And if you've wondered about it was actually an email about this. Actually, I think it was an Instagram question today. Somebody commenting about having seen American Original and wondering where the near miss behind the scenes stuff was.
Yeah.
And I will tell you right now, spoiler alert, it's all in the end credits, but it is in there. You've heard about it here. Now go watch it. And thanks to Covercraft on that as well.
Guys, if you've got your own debate, please write to us at everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or you can find us on the website everydaydriver.com and go to the contact button under the About tab. That's what all these people have done, and it doesn't matter. Well, it kind of matters if you're buying like tomorrow or in the next week. We might not be able to get it, but if it's, you know, you're a month to 3 months away and you're
we
just
need
starting
a little bit
the buying
of lead
process,
time.
you do need to give us some advance warning, but please send your debates in. We love that we are getting debates from all over.
For sure.
And we've got this next one from Scott P., who I don't know where exactly he's located, but he says that, you know, he's been enjoying the reviews here, and he's looking at something new because he currently has a 2011 Infiniti M37X.
Mm-hmm. That was their 5 Series competitor.
Bit of a rare car.
You don't see very many of them.
Yeah, you don't. It's getting up there in mileage, depreciating rapidly. And so he's looking at staying with the brand and going Q50, so the newer Infiniti.
Sure.
They switched initials.
It's the
case.
It's the current 3 Series equivalent under Infiniti.
It's all Q.
It's the Q. The Q50 is the 3, because it used to be the G37, which was the 3 Series equivalent, and now it's moved.
GMQ.
Yeah. Oh,
monkeys throwing darts at the alphabet. Sure, Q.
It's
going to
be
Q.
Great. Q works. Let's do Q. And then the Q60 is the coupe version. He's looked at those. But he's concerned about the fact that he would like a manual transmission, and Infiniti has said, manual? What is that? And they've also, by the way, said, manual steering? What is that? Because they've gone to steering by wire. So he's thinking, like, maybe I should leave Infiniti.
There's not an actual steering shaft? What?
Why is this?
What is this?
But side note on that real quick. Side note on that real quick. What I find hysterical is, for safety reasons, they made a steer-by-wire system that when that fails, it goes back to, I don't know how this works, it goes back to an actual shaft that it grabs so that it is connected if something fails.
So it is in there.
So, yeah. But my point
is, that was lawyers.
The question is, why on earth didn't he just, if the steering shaft is, let's just be done. Why build technology on top of it? Why did we do this? Anyway,
Your point is taken. I agree.
If there was no steering shaft, I understand. You had to connect it somehow. It's electric. The steering shaft is in there. What are we doing?
Dang it, I snipped the steering wire when I was trying to hotwire the car.
I snipped the steering wire. It's running, but the steering wheel does nothing.
Not the green one. Okay. All right. So fortunately, I don't think you're going to be hotwiring a car, but I think you need something in consideration of what you're looking at here. You need something luxury-oriented, Scott says, or at least has proper, air quotes, looks mm-hmm. to it.
It needs to seem professional and somewhat high-end.
Well, it's because of his career, and he's saying, you know, my career, it needs, I need a professional look to mm-hmm. things.
Sure.
Not the flashy kind of thing, but he needs something, you know, that matches what his career is. And that's still unknown at this point, but we kind of get it.
Totally.
Scott, you have also not given us a price, but by virtue of the list you've given us, I think we can kind of glean from that.
It's guided us for sure, yeah.
He's got the Subaru BRZ on here, and he's got a WRX, but then he moves to an A4 if it's a manual, and also a Lexus RC350. So that's a surprising choice thrown into the mix of these other cars.
Well, the BRZ and the RC are clearly, okay, here's a 2+2 more coupe shape.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, if you're concerned about kind of proper looks, luxury looks, the BRZ doesn't cut it. And you know, I love that car, but it doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
But that gives us the 2+2. And then, of course, the WRX versus the A4 is the same discussion. We're talking about small sedans. The WRX is a very fun car. We like it. Is that classy enough? You put it next to an Audi A4, and the Audi A4 is the grown-up's car. Let's be honest.
It just has 1,000 pounds more sound deadening is all it's got. It's really all the difference is, right?
Yeah, well, slightly different interior, but I take your point, yeah.
Okay, all right. So he's willing to give up manual transmissions as long as the car is stylish and offers very good handling.
Which is why the BRZ even made it on the list.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be super powerful. Helps save fuel. He wants good economy.
Yeah.
And something reliable, having come from some unreliable cars in the past.
Okay.
So what are we thinking here? Well, first of all, what's your budget that you're thinking?
Well, I'm trying to stay as close to 2025 as possible. I think the high end of this is probably 30, but I'm trying to hang out in a 2025 world. Based on the things he's listed, I think that's probably where we are.
Surprising nobody, I went from 25 to 35. That was my range.
I think 30 is probably the top end.
That was based on the A4 and the Lexus RC in there.
Totally.
So I thought 35, right?
Yeah, I think that's the high end. I think that's the high end. What I am chasing mainly is a luxury manual coupe or sedan. That's kind of my criteria that I'm chasing here, based on what Scott's told us. As a result, I don't think the WRX or BRZ are nice enough. I like them both. They're both cars that I would recommend to people, have recommended to people. In fact, this is the first time in forever that I've said the 86 platform does not work at all.
This is a momentous occasion.
Exactly.
Can I write it down? Stones?
Write it down. Okay. This podcast is going to be called 370, no 86. That's actually going to be in the title.
Break the glass in case of emergency.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think that works for you because I actually don't think it's nice enough. But I think the Lexus RC350 is interesting for you, Scott.
It is.
Because it is. Actually. It is in that same luxury. I mean, obviously, they targeted this. It's in that same luxury tier as the Infiniti, obviously better known. Mm-hmm. But you've been able to embrace a little more sports car while still staying in that world. Yes, I hear you on the Infiniti Q50 and the Q60. Of course, the Q60 is the Lexus RC competitor. I actually think that the Lexus is the better play here.
I'm with you.
Because of the steering, because of the way it delivers power, I actually even like, as much as I don't like the Predator Maw, I think the Lexus 3, the RC, it starts to work, and I think the LC500 is the place it should have always been. Those are the two places where that crazy grill actually works for me.
I can't say my derogatory comments. Starting to work.
Well, yeah. We are technically still a family podcast.
You're on the right path.
Lexus RC350 I like for you. I have two others here that are kind of wild cards that struck me, but where are you?
You know, I'm thinking mainly sedan, and I don't know your career.
Okay.
I don't know what that's involved with, and I'm thinking, I started the Alfa Romeo Giulia. I started there because you and I have been so surprised with the handling crisp feel coming out of that car out of a base Giulia.
It's awesome. What are the base used ones now?
I failed to actually look them up, but I would suspect around 30.
The base used ones probably are. Yeah.
Stylish. No manual, but really surprising, great driving car. Good handling.
I wouldn't apologize for it for a second.
The reliability is where things come into play.
We don't know.
It's an unknown.
We just don't know.
This is a brand new platform. It doesn't share anything else. They started with a clean sheet of paper. Rare does that happen at a car company, but they knew they had to bring the Alpha name back. So while I don't think it shares anything with the, oh, you bought an Alpha? You're screwed. Kind of thinking from the past. Yeah. I don't think it shares that. It's just, we don't know what this new chassis and platform and wiring harnesses, electronics, and everything was engineered for that car.
Yeah.
Doesn't share anything.
Yeah.
Not Maserati, not FCA, nothing.
You're in luck.
So we don't know.
25 to 30, you can get them.
Sweet.
I just looked it up.
I was thinking they had
Quadrifoliers are down to 55, by the way. That car haunts me.
Another public service announcement. Yeah. By the way.
25 to 30 for the base Julias, that is
so
a really compelling car for that money. Really very compelling.
With 30 to 50 to 60,000 miles, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to give it the benefit of the doubt, which I have with the Quadrifoglio.
Sure, sure.
And say, yeah, they're going to be good because they started fresh, you know, fresh suppliers, fresh everything. None of the old Alpha baggage from the past.
But these are 2017s too, which also means they're still under warranty.
True. Good point.
That's the other part.
Good point.
Where we're early on in the warranty life and you may have it for a year and be like, I'm done with that. But I like the fact that you're kind of unexpected there. And I think Scott would love driving that car a lot.
I think you would, Scott.
I really think you would.
Led me to a few other cars. I've got the G70 on my list, but it's a question mark because it is unknown, undriven by you and I.
Yeah, and I think it's over 30.
And it's probably at like 37, 38. So that's my headspace.
That
led me to the Kia Stinger.
Yes, we've seen those for mid-30s, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, the GT1 you're going to find for 32, 34, somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a large car. That led me to the BMW 430i.
Okay, you've stayed very new. I love it.
Which I think you could pull off.
Okay.
There's also a 2011 Porsche Panamera S floating around the internet for $29,900. It just happens to be floating out there.
Wow, I'm just not surprised that happened. Yeah.
Honestly, I'm actually kind of gravitating towards the BMW.
Okay.
If you can find one for 30 to 35, I'm kind of digging that for you.
Okay.
It's so understated. The reliability is going to be there. It's a modern BMW. And again, it's not the high-strung M car. It's not a race car.
True.
They're designing these things for, you know, a lot of use. Mm-hmm. It's not like BMWs break at, you're 23,000 miles.
Well,
no, they're going to go a long time. You just got to take care of them.
BMW does their, and so does Mini, actually. They do their 50,000 mile everything included thing, which let's just amortize it out. That's an accountant somewhere going, these cars aren't going to break in the first 50,000. We can afford to do that.
Yeah,
which means if you buy one at 70,000, BMW is no longer defending you. So clearly an accountant went, no, something's going to break.
51,000.
Exactly. But that first 50, you get one under 50, it's going to run for a while. I like that you're in BMW because I have two here that are German.
Do you? Okay.
One is, if we're going to stay BMW, 335 IS.
Yeah.
Classy.
Well, those are under 20.
Exactly.
Sheesh.
I'm trying to stay under 25. So classy.
Oh, yeah.
Fast. Understated. Only enthusiasts even know what that car is. Otherwise, it's just you bought a BMW. You bought a last-gen BMW.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a classy brand. Powerful, fun to drive. I didn't like them new. I love them used.
That's true.
I mean,
and
$20,000.
Brilliant.
They're a really surprisingly good car for that money. You could probably work your way into a newer base 2 Series 228.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at that RC, and I'm trying to think two-door coupe if I can. 2+2s for
228's right in there.
Which is why I like that 335 IS. I think that's compelling. So
just get rid of the, by now, used. They don't have those run flats. I think they were Dunlop run flats, and they didn't do the car justice
BMW kind of failed themselves with run flats on all their stuff for a while. Just move on from that. Yeah,
with
for
the run flats.
So 335 IS, I think you would love. And then also, you mentioned the A4 here, Scott. I'm going to see your A4, and I'm going to raise you to S4. S4 manual. Watch our piece, the RS4 versus the S4. We did the snow a couple years ago. That local S4 was bought for the mid-20s, if memory serves, and
was
it was a manual.
I thought it was like low 30s for some reason.
Maybe at the time, but by now they're down there.
That's true.
S4, manual transmission, done. Don't do A4. Go S4. You'll be very happy. This is obviously the generation prior to where we are now. Great car, though. Very cool car. So those are my recommendations for you. Hopefully, Scott, something in here is helpful.
Yeah. That's when the architecture started to change on those A4s, which is good.
Yeah.
and driving dynamics actually improved quite a bit.
Hey, watch that piece. We liked that S4 quite a bit, especially the fact that it had that manual and quite a bit of power. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Scott, thanks a million for writing in. Guys, if you've got your own car debate, you know where to write. We will jump to audience questions right now, though. And I want to start out from a question from You Know Nothing I Flow on Instagram.
I love
it's a long
avatars.
Handle.
It's awesome. Perfect.
Pretty cool. Asking us, do we have plans to put the podcast on Spotify? And okay. What are the hurdles? You know, he's saying a lot of people use it for music. Yep, absolutely. I listen to Spotify a lot, and it's become a default for podcasts, too. Mm-hmm. The good news with this switchover that Todd and I are talking about, the new podcast will syndicate to these following places. Mm. Apple Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, Spotify, and Stitcher.
You should be able to find it somewhere.
So therefore, it's going to be out there.
Hopefully you'll be hearing this podcast, yes.
Yeah, we're excited by that. So hopefully that answers your question. It might just take a while for things to syndicate and populate and all that stuff. So
just
be patient, give us a while, and by the time you hear this, everything should be sorted.
Hopefully. Somebody asked me, let's see, it's Alternator33 asked me on Instagram, I have a new winter beater. Yes, I do, the Mitsubishi Lancer with stories coming, video coming. Now that I have a new winter beater, does this mean now it's time to rotate the Lotus out and get something else? Mm. I'm not quite there yet. I think I'm probably about a year away from getting rid of the Lotus. I'm going to have it at least through the next good summer driving season. It's teasing me right now because it's just this week been warm enough to drive, but my driveway is still an icy disaster. So only the Cayenne and the Lancer with winter tire. My driveway's flat, by the way. It's just flat
it's
and icy lumpy right now.
Yeah.
And it baffles people when they try to back down it. You'd think it was some weird road course the way people screw up backing out of it. But it's a side note. So I can't get the Lotus with summer tires down the drive right now. Mm. So that's why it isn't going to be driven. And it's teasing me because it's clean and it hasn't been driven in a couple months. And I keep walking by it going, oh. So that car is in my life for a little bit yet. What's next? I don't know. I'm going to enjoy the Lotus for now. I've said it before. I'd love to get an Evora S. I really want an Evora 400. We'll see what the show does.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
There'll be raffling of cars. I'm sure when the Lotus goes, and again, when the Lotus goes, which isn't soon, I'm sure we'll raffle that car. I hope it goes to another great enthusiast owner, probably somebody listening right now.
Yeah, agreed. All right, randomness question on Instagram says that we often talk about driving in cars that we love as an event-based kind of feelings towards these cars, no matter how mundane they might be. What other choices do we make in our lives that turn ordinary moments into events? For him, it's hi-fi analog stereo equipment, unnecessarily fancy boutique guitars, and professional cookware. All very good.
All very interesting.
Very good.
I actually think, look, I'm gonna throw myself under the bus real quick. I actually think you are a much better connoisseur of things in your life than I am.
Well.
You are. I mean, you're going to be nice.
It comes from the design background.
You're going to be nice to me right now. But the truth is, I am much more disposable than just like, I need to eat something. I need to watch something. Except, actually, I am a little bit obsessive about movies. I want to watch a movie in a right situation with good sound. I want to have the lights at a nice low level.
Method
I'd like to watch on Blu-rays.
The movie, Blu-rays, you know, the way the movie is projected. It can't just be a movie. It has to be Blu-ray or better or something to pull the
I mean, look, I have a 9-year-old. We watch plenty of streaming stuff.
Yeah.
And yes, obviously all of our show is available on streaming. I consume plenty of stuff streaming. If I really sit down to watch a movie, I'd like to have it not streaming. I'd like to have it better than that. That's me being picky, but that's one place. Otherwise, I'm just like food, stuff, clothes. I'm not a very good connoisseur.
It is not a joyless experience.
No.
Is not joyless.
No. I would actually say that I eat, this is going to sound weird, I eat like a lot of enthusiast drive, and here's what I mean. A lot of my eating is commute eating. I need to fuel the body. And then I have moments on weekends and special occasions where I seek out a good meal. But a lot of time it's just like hungry, eat, must edit. That's a lot of what happens. Let's be honest.
True. Although we've been to plenty of nice restaurants.
I love a good restaurant.
You know, the honey with the cheese and the whole.
I love eating well, but it's just that's like the fun weekend drive for me. That's kind of how I eat. Otherwise I'm just commute eating. That's I'm going to stay with that term. I commute eat.
My God.
And then I have the fun Sunday drive eating. That's what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, I'm going to actually suggest four here, and they are going to be for both men and women, I will say.
Watches, whiskey, and design. Go.
Well, that is coming. Well, maybe.
Maybe.
We'll see. I'm still considering that. But the four are pens, the art and craft of writing. Okay. There's something about owning a very special, expensive pen and using it.
Okay.
And the things, the words that you choose rather than just using a simple Bic pen.
Okay.
I would say both men and women, shaving with a good razor. Whatever shaving that you do.
Sure, okay.
The better tools make for a better experience, right?
Okay.
Skincare, good money on good skincare, I would say. Okay. And then finally, having people over to drink a good bottle of wine for no reason at all. Just
okay.
The pictures, the laughs, the just,
I see it. Yeah.
You know, hey, it's a Tuesday. Hey, everybody, come on over because it's Tuesday. We're going to pop open this awesome bottle of wine.
My skin was a disaster. I had pizza face for most of my teenage years, and you can see the scars on my face if you watch the show. So as a result, I just did like, I have skin. I have skin. Hey. That's fine. That's about as far as it goes.
Hey,
anyway, my wife, meanwhile, somehow has not, I've told this story before, my wife has somehow not aged.
She gets carded.
We had friends, good friends. Again, my wife and I have been married 20 years. We had good friends that were in town, and their parents were with them as well. And they were walking around our house getting the tour, and they get, not that our house is grandiose, but it's just a thing everybody does, right?
Sure.
Show me your house.
Sure.
Top of our stairs are our wedding photos, which I never think about. They're there, whatever. I think I've told this story before.
Yes, you have. It's funny, though.
The mom stops and goes, says to my wife, she says, you look exactly the same. And my wife kind of demurs, and then she goes, and Todd looks good too. I always love it. That is my wife and I in a sentence. I just love, it caught in her throat. She couldn't figure out how to finish that sentence. And Todd looks good too. Anyway, so yeah.
You had climbing hair back then too. You had a lot longer hair.
I had a lot longer hair. Yeah, anyway. My hands look like the hands of a 90-year-old because I spent so much time climbing without sunscreen on my hands. Looking at that this week going, my hands are old, but it's a lot of sun damage. Anyway, ultimately, it's actually a public service announcement for sunscreen.
Hey,
I don't know how
go.
We got there, but welcome to the podcast.
Wow. We work our ways
you never
to
know.
A lot of places.
You never know.
For sure.
Loss550 said, what advice would you give someone trying to get into car photography or car videography as a career or business? This is kind of a joke and kind of not. Don't expect to make much. And I don't mean that to be an insult or depressing, but this is going to suffer. It's going to hurt for a while. You have to have a major love of it. This is how Paul and I have approached the situation. We work very hard, and we are by no means rolling in money, okay?
No.
And we've worked very hard to get the show where it is, and many of you have helped us and supported us. All of you listening support us. That helps the show make money.
Yeah.
This is a hard thing to break into and to make a good living at. Breaking into and making a living or making a side thing. That's what I would say. I would say start it as a side hustle. Just so you can do it and get experience and make some money and work your way toward it being the thing, and expect that Tom, who used to work for us and now is working for one of the biggest magazines in Europe.
Auto, Motor, and Sport.
Yes, he's doing very well over there. Tom is not rich, but the access he has is insane.
It's astounding. He's driven
everything. He's driven everything. In fact, I didn't even tell you this yet. I'm telling you right now on the podcast, he was in the 992 today.
I didn't need to hear that.
Yeah, I know you didn't. But anyway, you were in a GT3. It's okay.
Well, I was in a GT3 touring.
I was in neither, but
gallivanting.
But here's the thing.
I gallivanted today.
It's the experience and the stuff that you get into and get close to that makes it worth it, because the financials may be really tight. Beyond that, I would say just start doing it. Find friends' cars, other people that you know. If you're not driving a car, it's much easier to get it loaned for video and photography. The problem you and I had when we started was we wanted to drive that person's car, which they were not nearly as excited about.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people with very nice cars would like really nice photography. You can build up your portfolio and maybe work your way into getting paid for it.
Look, when I was at design school, a guy sat me down. His name's Dallas Good, and he has been an instructor for a long time, and he was an upperclassman, and he looked me in the eye, and he said, get good at something.
Mm.
Go get good at something.
Mm.
Whatever that is. In your design career, whatever you do. And I would suggest shadow a photographer or ask for an internship or pursue them or go work. Most internships are paid these days, but even if you have to do an unpaid internship now, I'd say go get the experience, because you will learn so much about yourself and how you work. And you'll say, well, I learned about that. That's not how I do it, but at least I know how other people do it. Or you'd say, wow, I had no idea how that got done.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. And then you take it further your own way. Absolutely go get that experience, because you're going to need it. And there's no substitute for the mileage, the work. Todd and I, both have held jobs up to this point, other jobs, very much did our best to make it not evident that we did with the show, even though it was a side hustle for a long time.
For a long time, yeah.
But it's no longer that way. I mean, we're just starting, you know, to finally be able to realize
last
that.
Last year, 18 months is when that's really happened.
You know, for a good 10 years, we both had other jobs in addition to doing this. Mm-hmm. And with the perception that this is the only thing we do.
To some degree, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So that's been the difference. Anyway, appreciate the question, though. Really cool. All right. Question here. We've got to jump into design questions from Michael D. If I were to spend the rest of my life only designing one part of a car.
I saw this. This is cool. Keep going.
I knew that my design would be manufactured exactly as drawn, and I can update the design once every 12 months. What part would that be? His guess is that I would design seats. It's not bad, actually. It's not bad, because I'm thinking about interiors.
Yeah.
And interiors are becoming ever so much more crucial in the buying and ownership experience nowadays.
Yeah, agreed.
Not just seats.
Agreed.
But of course, every designer gravitates towards exteriors because that's where the money shot is. That's the glory. You design that thing.
Yeah. I didn't do an interior door handle. I did the exterior of this. Yeah.
The overall sketch. Mm-hmm. So, headlights could be up there. The graphics,
I could see that.
The graphics on a car because you incorporate new technology as things change.
Sure, yeah.
So headlights are endless. There's a lot of creativity you can have there. Refreshing, I would say. Mm. But that can get boring. Seats is not bad. But I'd say maybe instrument panel design, depending on the car, because there's so much to be done with either autonomous or what does the car's function involve? And are we going to have buttons in place of a shifter like Chevy does now? Are we going to actually make that choice?
The GMC Terrain, button. Yeah. They're window switches masquerading as transmission buttons.
Hey,
it's awesome.
Have a box of leftover switches.
What do we do with these?
You know what we could do.
That's terrible. Shalim Hussein asked on Facebook, he asked a lot of things. I'm going to try to touch on a couple of these. He's essentially saying, where's the line of touchscreen tech versus actual buttons? He's kind of asking it four or five different ways, like touchscreen or some touchpads or a mouse, or you need the puck for different things. Should climate controls be buttons or not? I'm going to see if I can define this really quickly. Touchscreens are here to stay. Mm-hmm. The best thing about a touchscreen is, look, pick up your phone. You can have...
Not where you're driving.
No. Yeah. Layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of information without ever having a single button.
Yeah.
It could be endless, theoretically. So that's why they're here to stay and they're great, okay? And it's why they work for phones and they're not going away.
Right.
However,
right.
You need things in a car that you can do reflexively. After you do it three or four times, you can never take your eyes off the road, and you can reach over and you can change that thing. And that should be volume on every car, should be a knob.
Yeah, yeah.
Climate controls should be a knob or a button that you can touch. Those two, without fail, I think should always be the case. You can go nuts with other stuff very easily, but those are the two things that just you're going to change while you're driving, and you need to change while you're driving in the middle of doing two other things.
Right, right.
Sometimes those buttons are on the steering wheel. Of course, obviously, cruise control. Notice cruise control is not buried anywhere in your infotainment system. That has a button or a stalk. Why? Because you need to be able to do it over and over and over.
True.
That should be volume. I know it happens on steering wheels too, but that should be volume, and it should be temperature controls. Also for the benefit of your passenger who doesn't want to dig through 45 menus to go two levels down on the fan speed.
Now, how do you put the spoiler up?
Yeah. So anyway, so those are the two things right away that I think.
That's in three submenus deep, actually.
Yeah, well, in some cases. I remember when we actually were with a new Panamera, and it took us 5 minutes and multiple submenus to pop the spoiler up while the car was sitting still.
It actually is that deep.
That's insane, yeah.
All right, Christopher L. on Facebook asked me about my driving style.
He
said, it always catches his eye. He can't help but notice that I'm holding onto the wheel with my palms, and I don't fully wrap my fingers around the wheel. Maybe it's, you know, the finger expressive thing, but, you know, he's saying he drives more like you with his hand fully encasing, fully grasping the steering wheel. I guess I've never really thought about it, but now that you've asked the question, I'm breaking this down in my mind.
Okay.
The faster that I go, the faster that I drive, mm-hmm. the more my hands curl around the steering wheel.
I've seen that for
and
sure.
I'm doing less with my fingers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose you could verify this from footage.
I absolutely can verify that. That's absolutely how you drive.
At low speeds and even, you know, the 30 to 50 mile an hour interview when we're on camera, mm-hmm. I'm more palms because I'm feeling the car's behavior through both palms, but mm-hmm. my fingers are more readily available for the switches, the mm-hmm. stocks.
Yeah.
But then, and paddles, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But then the faster you go, you're not using any of that stuff anymore.
True.
Over 100. I'm talking Autobahn, by the way.
sure you are. Sure you
German
are.
German yeah. highway.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Talking
right, got
that.
It.
The faster you go, I don't need the stocks. I don't need the turn signal. I don't mm-hmm. need anything. Mm-hmm. I don't need paddles anymore because I'm probably in top gear.
Yeah.
So I just need to drive and concentrate. So my hands curl around the faster I go. It's just been sort of a subconscious thing. Now that you've actually called it out, and I'm going to be thinking about it every interview.
Well, but
from here on out.
But honestly, there's a little bit of a perception thing going on here because you're right, Chris. I put my hands all the way around the wheel, but I am also not holding very tight.
Very loose, very lightweight.
My fingers are wrapped around the wheel, but I'm not gripping. There's no white knuckling going on. Paul's just exaggerating that, if you will. If you will, the contact patch for me is still, if you will, my knuckles and my palm. My actual knuckles where my fingers connect and my palm. That's actually the contact patch, even though my fingers are wrapped around. When
you're
you watch
lightly
guys that are professional drivers, they drive very loose. Their hands are very loose, and there's a lot of pressure through the palms on the wheel, and the fingers are there for sure, but there's not a lot of white knuckling going on. My driving continues to change over time. I feel like I'm slowly getting better with my hands, but it is interesting, and you are definitely speed related, Paul, for sure. The slower you're going, the more loose your fingers get, and the more you have to speed up, and the more you get kind of straight line, we're going hard on the Autobahn or a track or whatever, the more your fingers close in, because you're right, you're not doing anything else.
Yeah, I had never thought about it
until
now.
You also prefer paddles on the column, which I hate. I like them on the wheel because I don't want to move my fingers much. I just now thought of that, too. That's also the case, which brings me nicely to Baloo 240's question about dual-clutch transmissions.
Oh, yes.
See what I did there?
Yes,
he's saying outside of the Volkswagen Audi group, so Volkswagen Audi Porsche, who makes a good dual-clutch transmission? I've got three for you.
Excellent.
McLaren makes a great one.
Good.
They make a very good one. BMW's DCT is actually pretty good. Their SMG was terrible. Their DCT is actually good because the SMG wasn't a dual clutch.
It wasn't actually a
dual
clutch.
So the DCT is actually pretty good, and I think when that's dialed into a really good sedan, that's very fun. And then I also have to give a shout out to little tiny Mitsubishi, who has the one in my Lancer, which when it works well, it works wonderfully. And I say that because it is finicky. This is an early 2000s tech dual clutch, and all of those. Look, Ferrari, whoever was making a dual clutch in the early 2000s, it wasn't quite what it is now. And Porsche was like 2009 by the time they were really doing theirs.
Well,
okay?
Yeah, that's when they started.
So Mitsubishi had this in the car as of 2008, which means it was being designed in the early 2000s, little tiny Mitsubishi making a dual clutch. When it works fast, it works wonderfully. I say it that way because it has a normal mode that tries to be an automatic and isn't great. And also, I have discovered, those of you going through a polar vortex right now, it does not like the cold. The car parks outside. When it is below zero
that's
here,
amazing.
The transmission just goes, you know what? I'm just going to stay in park to defend myself, which was not something I knew before I bought the car. So the days we've had where it's been like negative 15 and the car starts up, the transmission goes, nope.
I'm
not
thinking
doing
it's
that.
A brittle kind of a thing. It's protecting against just the brittle nature of components
that it's
could
got,
just shatter.
Exactly. You've got that $200 a gallon, takes at least 2 gallons.
I was going to say, how much is
transmission
that again?
Fluid. Yeah, exactly. So it defends itself a little more than I'd like it to, but at the same time, I'd rather that than a blown transmission.
No kidding. All right, back to some design questions here. I've got to find it. Really quick, it's about wheels, as a matter of fact. It's about manufacturers and wheels from Downshifter GT. Why are most original equipment wheels so bad? Are they an afterthought? No, as a matter of fact, companies and designers spend a lot of hours producing a lot of different designs. But what they do, think about this, they produce different wheel designs for different trim packages. So the designers not only design the car, but they have to design every trim package. And it also has to meet a price and manufacturing standard. So the wheel design is driven by, okay, well, are these just going to be cast wheels? Are, you know, on the upper sports car tiers, are they going to be forged? Are they going to be, you know, what manufacturing process are we going to use? And they consider the type of car. So Tesla wheels will look very different from, you know, the Corvette ZR1 wheels. I'll give an example.
Yeah, theoretically, yeah. I take your point.
The kind of thing that they're going to want to do and the kind of technology they're using in brakes. So, okay, what kind of cooling do we need to incorporate? And, you know, what do we want the car to say? Is this more of a low rolling resistance, BMW i3 kind of look?
Okay.
And then also, do the wheels need to dominate the design? Do we, you know, we've got this i3, we've got this new cool thing. The wheels need to be really pushed back and subtle. They're not going to be, we don't get HREs on everything. I want HREs on everything, but we don't
get that. But you don't want the price tag and they don't work on every car, yeah.
And then the whole point of having HREs or something like that is to say, look at my wheels.
Yeah, true.
It's not what the car companies want you to do. So they want you to move your eye around the car and notice certain things. You know, Porsche makes great wheels. BMW does. Mm-hmm. That's part of the look, part of the jewelry. But sometimes, in many cases, I think the OE wheels are better than anything else that I've seen on that car, on whatever the car that is. Sometimes I think they nail it better, and it looks better stanced and just has a cleaner design. So therefore, they do spend a lot of time on design.
Yeah.
Pages, bulletin boards. They put all their designs up on the movable walls. Mm-hmm. They move these walls around the studio. They're on casters.
Yeah.
And they're either magnetic or they tape up their drawings. And you roll them over for design discussions. And then you'll roll them back and tuck them away and open up the studio again. And pages of wheel designs.
Totally. Well, you taught me, and I have noticed this for sure. You taught me more spokes is more luxury.
It is.
And if you start to look at cars, you can see that. You can see their intention based on the kind of spokes they did and the number of spokes. And you'll see luxury cars have got a whole lot more spokes than a dedicated sports car by and large.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's a expensive sports car.
Then it blurs the line. Yeah,
then
yeah,
it, you're starting to blur the line. Yeah, it's starting to be like, okay, more an aggressive shape, but there's more of them. Mm-hmm. So it's a sporty, really expensive, a McLaren or something like that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of thought that goes into it.
Remember the Everyday Driver TV show? New episodes are happening tomorrow. That is Saturday, and they're coming soon to Amazon. If you do not get Amazon, you're listening overseas. I know. Or you're listening in Canada, not even overseas. Why can't you? Anyway,
I don't understand.
I'm going to stop.
Share with them.
Vimeo can help you out. Yes. Thank you to all of you that have already seen our YouTube Here's Everything We Do kind of breathless trailer that I watch and makes me tired. But I am very excited about all that stuff. We're doing a ton of stuff this year, lots more stuff coming on YouTube. Thank you guys for engaging with us. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com is a place to reach us directly or through the website, EverydayDriver.com.
Thanks again for all your questions. We're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.